Our next proceeding is Nicole Cox as appellant versus Mid Minnesota Mutual Insurance Company, respondents, A181463. And as council may be familiar, appellant will have 15 minutes to present its comments and argument, respondent 15 minutes and 5 minutes for appellant to respond. We do ask that when you approach the podium, identify yourself, and if you have co-counsel, identify that counsel that's with you as well. And as soon as you're ready, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name's Chuck Lloyd, and I'm here with Adam Hagedorn on behalf of Nicole Cox, the plaintiff and appellant in this matter. The primary issue for the court to resolve on this appeal is whether the wording of the limitations provision in the insurance policy insuring Ms. Cox's home is to be given the same meaning as the language of the standard fire policy limitations provision in 65A01, even though they do not use the same language. If the court determines that yes, the language in the policy that says it has to be brought within 2 years of the loss is the same as language in the statute that says it must be brought within 2 years after the inception of the loss, then the district court should be affirmed, and this case is done. If, however, because the language is different, and because the language in the statute has a specific meaning that is not replicated in the policy, and therefore is not to be interpreted in the same way, then the district court has to be reversed and the case remanded for resolution on the merits. The analysis of this case, even though it really starts and ends with the policy, we have to start with the statute of limitations, because the 65A01 contains very specific language about when an action has to be brought, assuming there isn't some more favorable language in the fire policy. That language specifies that it has to be 2 years after the inception of the loss. Now, that language comes to Minnesota from New York. In 1955, Minnesota decided they were going to adopt almost entirely the Massachusetts state fire policy, but they made one critical exception, and that was the limitation of action language that they adopted from New York. By the late 1960s, 46 states have adopted the after the inception of the loss language for their state fire policies. It's curious that one of the outliers of the four states is Massachusetts. That Minnesota adopted the rest of their policy. They chose not to use that language, but Minnesota rejected that and went on with the New York statute. Now, why is that important? It's important because the phrase after the inception of the loss is basically become a term of art. The United States Court of Appeals in the Second Circuit in the Fabozzi case that we cite in both our brief, our opening brief and our reply brief, wrote, the phrase after the inception of the loss is regarded in essence as a term of art which fixes the limitations period to the date of the accident. That's at page 91 of the Fabozzi case. In other words, if that language is utilized, that the statute utilizes, the date of the fire is the date that begins the run, the limitations period, and an action has to be brought within 2 years of that date. But that's not the language that the insurers in this case chose to use. They chose to use instead the single undefined term loss, that the action has to be brought within 2 years of the loss. Now, the insurers argue, and the district court accepted, that loss and inception of the loss means exactly the same thing. The district court went so far as to call it a difference in writing style, I believe was the phrase that the court used, and nothing more.
Would it be true, Mr. Lloyd, that there is no factual difference of the day of the loss, which I understand your point being inception of the day of the fire, in other words? So your client's point is that for this purpose, loss, even though it's not defined in any way in the contract, has to be some subsequent date related to a denial of the claim or some other one?
Correct.
And that's simply by gleaning the statutory history? Is that why you started out with the Minnesota adopting?
It is, Your Honor, and where that comes from, there's two things that I'd say with respect to that. First off, the New York case law, in terms of interpreting very similar language relative to loss or date of loss versus inception of the loss, says that that language is less precise and does not begin the limitation period to run at the date of the fire or the date of the accident. That's point A. Point B, their own policy language, though, Your Honor, has a defined term that talks about the day of the fire or the day of the accident, and that term is occurrence. It's not loss. And if the court bothers to do what I did, actually Mr. Hagedorn did, which was to go through and count the number of times that the word loss is used in the policy and see all the different ways that that word is used, it has different meanings almost every time it gets used, which is the exact sort of prototype of an ambiguity.
Your client must disagree with the respondent. I thought I recall in briefing that would render absurd the definitions because of the other uses of loss. But what you're saying is by Mr. Hagedorn's finding, the law has many different meanings throughout.
Yes.
Other than the day of the occurrence.
Correct, Your Honor. If they wanted the limitation period to begin on the date of the fire, they should have used the word occurrence, which is a defined term, which is the date of the accident. Now, and this is not just
what the statute says. You want it to be the mirror of what the statute requires?
No, Your Honor. What I am saying is that the policy provides a greater limitations provision than the statute does, which means under this court's decision in Kruger and the Supreme Court's more recent decision in Poehler, that it's the policy language that then controls, not the statute. Because as this court stated in Kruger, the statute is not to be used as a sword against the policyholder when the policy language provides more favorable.
What authority guides us to make that determination that we do not use the language in the statute and instead apply the preciseness of the policy?
That's Kruger, Your Honor, from this court, and Poehler versus, let me give you the exact citation.
We have them in your brief. I didn't know if you had any other authority that would so direct this court to adopt that path.
That's the Minnesota law, Your Honor. I would also point the court to the Fabozzi case from the Second Circuit that basically addresses this case for us. The language in the Fabozzi policy was a little different, but not a lot. And what the court said there, also at page 91, is that at the same time, however, New York courts continue to regard more generic language, such as policy provisions foreclosing suit a certain period after loss or damage, as triggering the limitations period only from the time that liability accrues under the provisions of the policy. And they cite a 1950 and a 1941 case for that proposition. They then go on and said, and this is the language at page 93 of Fabozzi.
Fabozzi, at least my recollection of Fabozzi is the way the statute read, the statute specifically indicated the limitations period did not run until the claim had accrued versus the date of the accident. Isn't that specific to New York, which would be contrary to what we have?
No, Your Honor. It was the policy. They interpreted the policy to say that it was when the claim accrued. The statute in New York, the limitations provision in New York statute is identical to Minnesota's. It is 2 years after the inception of the loss. It was the policy, and it's this language from Fabozzi that says the policy is what is more forgiving. While loss is used frequently throughout the contract in other contexts, it is never defined. Instead, the policy's definition section refers to occurrence. This latter term means an accident, including continuous or repeated exposure to substantially the same general harmful conditions, which results in a bodily injury or property damage. If Lexington, the insurance company in Fabozzi, intended to draft around New York's century-old interpretation of its limitations language by tying the period to the date of the occurrence or accident, it could have readily done so. At most, the other uses of loss in the contract render the term ambiguous. In the absence of other extrinsic evidence as to the party's intent, it is well-settled law that where an insurer has drafted the policy as here, any ambiguity in the policy should be resolved in favor of the insured. That is identical to Minnesota law. Absolutely identical. The Fabozzi case, like I say,
Can I just clarify? The error of law, then, in your client's position, is the judge did not find ambiguity, just simply identified it, seemed to believe it was an unambiguous phrase that referred to the same day as occurrence as in inception of loss. I mean, in effect, that was the judge's decision. So where you would disagree, your client, is that, no, it's not clear from the policy, therefore it is ambiguous, therefore we need to look at this history that you're referring to, the statutory term of art.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, there's no question that the ambiguity, whether there's an ambiguity in this policy is a question that this court's going to review de novo. And as I say, with the term loss, undefined is used all over the place and used in different ways. Black's Law Dictionary defines loss not as a single event, but looks at it as a financial consequence. And that's why the statute, when it talks about inception of the loss, what we're talking about is a continuum that begins with an event that causes damage and then ends with either the payment of the claim or the denial of the claim. And that's the loss. Occurrence, and that becomes clear in this policy if the court looks at the deductible section in the of the policy, which can be found at page 16 of 28 of the policy. Because what it says is we pay only that part of the loss over the deductible stated on the declarations or any optional coverage. The deductible applies per occurrence. So loss and occurrence are not the same thing, A, in this policy. And that's the only way that you can get to the outcome that the district court reached, is by saying loss and occurrence are the same thing, even though when we're talking about deductibles, the policy says they're not the same thing, they're very different.
Counsel, I'm confused about something that you've stated in the brief on page 14, where you've indicated that the Minnesota Court of Appeals case of O'Reilly versus Allstate Insurance, it's a published decision from 1991. And on page 14 of your brief, you've suggested that that is a case in which this court has interpreted inception of the loss, the
yes.
statutory language.
Yes.
But when I read the case, it seems to me to be a case that this in which this court interpreted the word loss. This court was interpreting policy language that said the date of loss. I don't see anywhere in the opinion the word inception.
Oh, Your Honor.
Am I missing something?
Respectfully, yes.
Tell me where.
Okay.
Please.
It would be at page. I cut it out and put it into my outline.
23. Oh, okay. At least one court has adopted a flexible rule in progressive damage cases that fixes the inception of the loss
yes.
as the date of the loss. But this court, this court was interpreting policy language that said date of loss.
That's correct, Your Honor,
And it decided that the date of loss begins to run on a claim when appreciable damage occurs and is or should be known to the insured. That's the holding of this court.
Your Honor, I would agree, A, but B, that's not the language that is in this policy in any event. Second, the court in O'Reilly says that date of loss is not as restrictive as inception of the loss. And it's not the same.
Okay, but if we...
Okay.
The statute says inception of loss.
Correct.
The policy in the case before us today says date of loss.
No, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. It says 2 years from the loss. It
okay.
doesn't say the
I'm
date
sorry.
Of loss.
I'm sorry. It says the loss.
Correct.
So doesn't O'Reilly assist us in determining when the loss occurs?
Your Honor, what it says in O'Reilly's talking about a delayed case.
I understand. The facts are very different.
The facts are incredibly different, and the language, the wording of the policy is important. Because, as I said, in the it's trying to differentiate, because a lot of states have said inception of the loss means whenever even the latent damage begins. It doesn't matter when it's discovered. And what this court was doing was to say, no, we're going to have a discovery rule with respect to this, that the statute doesn't preclude that, and we're going to have a more favorable response. That doesn't weigh upon this case other than to say the court acknowledged that inception of the loss means the date of the event.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for your answer.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Bo Pyrus. I'm at the Willenbring Law Firm in Cold Spring, Minnesota, appearing this morning on behalf of the respondents. 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, when this matter first became before the district court, the appellant wrote to the district court, both sides agree that the plaintiff had to commence her action within 2 years of the date of the fire. That is required by the state fire policy codified in Minnesota statutes, and it is what is contained in the defendant's insurance policy. It's undisputed that the fire in this matter occurred on the afternoon of January 9th, 2014. It's undisputed that the sheriffs in this matter served the respondents on January 14th and January 19th, 2016. The policy, as was just being discussed, does say that you have to commence an action within 2 years after the loss. And I would, as the court pointed out, I would direct the court to O'Reilly, because in that case, this court defined the loss, and it said that the phrase, the date, doesn't modify either way the word the loss. And it compared the loss to inception of the loss. And it found that where a fire occurs or when something occurs all in one day, when there's not a latent or progressive damage issue, the date of the issue is when the limitations period starts to run. When there is a progress, if this fire would have lasted multiple days, that is when the inception of the loss is distinct from the loss. The appellant cites a lot to Fabozzi, and in New York, they have created a system where inception of the loss is an indivisible term of art. You either use inception of the loss or you don't. The O'Reilly case back in 1991, the published case, is entirely inconsistent with that analysis, that you can parse the loss, and inception was a restrictive modifier of that. And so just because a policy doesn't use the magic language like in New York, that doesn't mean that we just throw our hands up and submit the issue to the jury. We look at the word. And in this case, we have a fire that indisputably occurred on one afternoon, and so there's no issue about when the appreciable damage occurred. It's stipulated.
Mr. Pyrus, would it be true, though, that in our case, in this case, we would have necessarily, because there is no definition for that particular provision in this contract, that we'd look at the entire contract and the uses of the word loss, and as pointed out, there is apparently a distinction between loss and occurrence in this very, very contract, because occurrence would be another common phrase we might look at as the day, so it must therefore mean something different. We would have to glean all those, I think it was Mr. Hagedorn must have spent and got the number of places in the contract that referenced the word loss. Would we not be required to look at that to discern what is meant in this particular case for loss?
Occurrence is used, and that occurrence is not used in the statute, so the policy does provide a definition, and so that was in an effort apparently to provide additional clarity. On the issue of the policy's use of the word the loss, it is explicitly consistent with the statute's use of the loss. There are times, as we've pointed out, where the loss is used as a temporal modifier. It says, when does something happen before or after a loss? The insured has the duty to protect the property from further damage in case of any loss. That language is identical in the policy as to the statute. So all of those times where the loss is used, it's used in an identical fashion in the statute. In the case of fraud in an application, you look at were misrepresentations made in the application made before a loss happens, it's a lower standard. But if you look at after the loss, you have to prove a misrepresentation with intent to defraud in order to cancel the policy. So the loss is the defining moment. It's the measuring moment for that analysis as well. And the policy uses that identically to the statute. The policy and the statute both occasionally refer to the loss as a monetary amount. The statute provides the amount of loss for which this company may be liable shall be payable within 60 days, blah, blah, blah. The statute or the policy provides an identical, nearly identical provision. An insured loss will be payable within 5 business days after the satisfactory. So we're not saying that the loss doesn't have a couple of meanings within the statute, but if the court finds that this policy is ambiguous because it uses the loss in the same manner as the statute, then all policies that adopt the language of the loss from the statute, all of those policies would be ambiguous, and we can never have any sort of legal argument about the limitations period. The Fabozzi case is a 2010 case, and I would point the court to, and as we did in our briefing, the Lyons Park case, which is admittedly an unpublished case, but it's a 2015 case that was issued 5 years after the Fabozzi case. That Court of Appeals case acknowledged the precedent of the O'Reilly case and ignored the Fabozzi standard and the New York standard. So the Fabozzi in New York, they do what they do in New York. All of the cases from Minnesota that we were able to find adopt this O'Reilly standard of defining the loss.
I'm going to ask you that. I'm just going to assume that was going to be next. In your best concise way, what would you define the O'Reilly standard as it would apply in our case? Or how would that standard?
Sure. The loss is the date of the fire if the fire occurs on one date. If the fire occurred over multiple dates, O'Reilly says you look at when the appreciable damage occurred. But if it's not a latent defect, if it's not a progressive damage case, the loss is the date of the fire. And that's what the Lyons Park case clarifies. The Lyons Park case, there was a fire and somebody forgot to tell the gas company to turn the gas off, so the gas company racked up a bunch of gas bills and after the date of the fire, and they tried to claim that that was a progressive damage claim. They were incurring additional damages, and the Lyons Park case said no. The O'Reilly case says date of the fire. If the fire happens on one day, then it's the date of the fire. This additional gas charges were this. It's not a progressive damage case. Fire happened on one date. That's the date of the loss. I just have a little bit of time, and I want to touch on an issue that hadn't been addressed before, but we only get to this analysis if we allow the appellant to change their legal position 3 years later. We argued this to Judge Cashman in March of 2016. And I open today with what the appellant argued to Judge Cashman at that time. The appellant argued strongly that the limitations period in the statute and in the policy ran on January 11th. And the issue that was also argued to Judge Cashman is...
I mean, essentially you're saying the ambiguity argument just raised its head after the Supreme Court determination.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Yes. There was no mention of nobody knows what loss is, inception of the loss versus the loss. There was no argument about that. They specifically...
Well, what authority says that when you have a remand from the Supreme Court that you're prohibited from doing that?
The doctrine of judicial estoppel, Your Honor.
Minnesota doesn't recognize that.
The published decisions of the Court of Appeals have adopted and we've cited Bauer versus Black Duck. I think there was a typo in our motion or our brief. It's 614 Northwest 2nd, 747, quoting Port Authority. And they do adopt the doctrine of judicial estoppel. It has gone to the Minnesota Supreme Court, and the Minnesota Supreme Court, as recently as 2016, has said we declined to adopt or reject that doctrine, despite there being published Court of Appeals cases utilizing that doctrine. And then the Supreme Court, in all of these cases, goes through the full judicial estoppel analysis and says, we're not going to accept or we're not going to adopt it or reject it, despite there being Court of Appeals cases doing it and the judges doing it, it wouldn't have applied anyway in this case. So the notion that, Judge Cashman in this case is tasked with deciding whether, you know, we go through all of these motions and whether he can let a party just change their legal argument after the first
Mr. Pyers,
one doesn't
can I
work.
Clarify that. Was it really a legal argument versus a factual discussion related to a sole issue of whether an extension from the 9th to the 11th was to be allowed? In other words, that was factually the dates that you were dealing with and they were dealing with, and that was the sole issue that ultimately was resolved by that.
Sure. The basis of that, that's a legal argument. Does the statute apply to the policy? And you only get to that statute to get to Monday if the limitations period expired on a weekend. So the appellant argued to Judge Cashman the limitations period expired on the weekend, and when the statute says when a limitations or when a period expires on a weekend, we get till Monday. But so that was Judge Cashman's holding.
It was a Rule 12 motion I think your client had raised, correct? So that's the standard. So is your point being that to assuming we were to adopt judicial estoppel, that the only way they would have avoided that is they would have had to make an alternative argument at that same time. Alternatively, these dates are irrelevant because of the loss language.
The only reason we got to arguing about that was they were attempting to argue the faxes on that Monday were sufficient. If they would have taken the position 3 years ago that the limitations period ran at some point after the sheriff's subsequent service, we could have avoided all of this for the last 3 years. We go through the full analysis of when did this period run, we go to the Court of Appeals, we go to the Supreme Court, and then we go back to Judge Cashman, and they said all of that didn't matter anyway because, you know, the limitations period ran after the sheriff served it. And that's the whole concept of judicial estoppel is when you're successful in arguing something, you don't get to just change your story. And everybody would have preferred to have just, if this was the position that they were taking, argue this 3 years ago and skip, as exciting for me as it was to argue to the Supreme Court, it didn't do anybody any good if we just let them change their story at the end here. So I appreciate your time if there aren't any questions.
Very well.
Thank you.
Very well, thank you. Respond, our appellant, you may proceed.
A couple of things, Your Honor. I'll address this issue about judicial estoppel very quickly. I would urge the court to go back and look, dive back 3 years ago and pull up document 16, which is the insurer's memorandum in support of their motion to dismiss. The original motion that got the whole party started and up and down the appellate courts. Their only argument throughout that entire memorandum was that service on the Department of Commerce was improper, and that they could have a policy limitation period that was less than the statute. Our argument was the policy can never be less than the statute, and that the statute would expire, because of the inception of the loss, not on Saturday, not on Sunday, but would run till Monday, when we delivered, albeit by fax, the summons and complaint to the sheriff. That was the only issue it was only then in reply when they even addressed the question of delivery. That issue didn't come up. We're under no obligation to seek a prophylactic ruling from the trial court that our case is timely. That burden is on them to present what the issue was. And so to the extent that we didn't have this issue fleshed out earlier, it's because of the way they brought this motion, not because of the way we responded to it. We responded to it completely accurately. Now, judicial estoppel hasn't been adopted by the Supreme Court, and this court, as recently as last April, was very clear in the Foltz case that said it's outside of this court's purview to be able to adopt judicial estoppel. That was, like I say, in April. It's an unpublished decision, and it's at page 28. Of our opening brief where we've got that quote. In the reply brief, we quoted from PHT Systems, which was from 2006, 6 years after the Bauer case, that said it hasn't been adopted and we're not in a position to be able to adopt it. Bauer has been cited 5 times by this court, 4 never followed. 4 times the court has said judicial estoppel has not been adopted, and therefore we're not going to adopt it here. The second reason why you shouldn't apply, even if you decide to forget all of that stuff and adopt judicial estoppel, our position is not inconsistent. It's not opposite of the earlier position. Our earlier position was the policy cannot be less than the statute. To say that the policy is greater than the statute is consistent and can be easily reconciled with that earlier position. But the fact that we said it couldn't be less than, if our position then changed and said, oh, now it's less than the policy or less than the statute, then they'd have a basis to say, hey, wait a minute, they're now contradicting themselves. But we're not. It's a further elaboration, but it's entirely consistent, both as a matter of common sense and as a matter of legal reasoning. Counsel's completely wrong when he announces that New York has a bright line standard, that if you don't use inception of the loss, then there's no standard. The Fabozzi case makes it very clear that if the insurance company didn't want to use the language of inception of the loss, they should have used their defined term, occurrence. And that would have satisfied what they were attempting to do to make the fire or the accident the date upon which the time runs. This insurance company could have done the same thing. O'Reilly doesn't speak to that issue. A, we have no idea whether loss was a defined term in O'Reilly, whether there was the corresponding defined term of occurrence, and B, what O'Reilly was attempting to do was to soften the statute in terms of allowing for a discovery rule where other states had said basically, a lot of states had said, no, there is no discovery rule. Inception of the loss means whenever something starts, that's it. But it didn't define loss in that setting. And the Lyons Park case is not helpful to the insurers in this case because the Lyons Park policy language says the action is brought within 2 years after the date on which the direct physical loss or damage occurred. They were very specific. This insurance company could have tied the limitations period to the fire. They could have said 2 years after the inception of the loss. They could have used Lyons Park language. They could have used their defined term occurrence. Instead, they chose to use the ambiguous term loss, which they admit has multiple meanings throughout the policy. As a consequence, that has to be interpreted against them, and the district court reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments and briefing, and we'll take the matter under advisement. Have a good day. You're welcome.